طفلة تمتطيه قوس قزح، طفلة تمتطيه قوس قزح من مخيم إلى بلد مهجر، من مخيم.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Palestine, a weekly broadcast of news, analysis, commentary, and discussion of issues relevant to the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's brutal occupation and colonization of their homeland. The purpose of This Week in Palestine is to feature the Palestinian narrative, the Palestinian voice that is too often missing in the presentation of news and analysis in the American mainstream media. This is your host, John Roberts. The coronavirus pandemic dominates the world's attention and the media's focus. So it is also in Palestine. This week, we will present an inside look into the effects of the virus in Palestine, and in particular, Bethlehem, where COVID-19 has hit the hardest. Palestinians face the double whammy of fighting the pandemic while resisting the occupation that brings the military and illegal Jewish settlers into their space. You are about to hear a recent Skype conversation between Abud Albusroor, founder and director of the Al-Ruwad Cultural Center in the Aida refugee camp, and Michael Spath, director of the Indiana Center for Middle East Peace in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Michael Spath begins the online conversation.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us, some video conferencing and some by phone. My name is Michael Spath, and I'm the executive director of the Indiana Center for Middle East Peace, the Indiana voice for peace, justice, human rights, and intercultural encounter based here in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Thank you to our board chair, Terry Doherty. We're recording the interview and we'll make it available on our website, Facebook page, and to those on our email listserv. We know that Bethlehem is the epicenter of the coronavirus pandemic in the West Bank, and the refugee camps have been hit particularly hard. So it's important to reach out to our friends there, and we're delighted to spend some time today with our dear friend, Dr. Abdel Fattah Albusroor, founder and general director of the Al-Ruwad Cultural and Art Society in the Aida refugee camp in Bethlehem. One last piece of information that I'll be repeating at the end of the interview. If you'd like to make a tax-deductible contribution to support Abed and the work of Al-Ruwad, you can, one of two ways. You can send a check to Indiana Center for Middle East Peace and mark it for Al-Ruwad, and we'll make sure that every penny that is sent to us will get to them. Our address, and I'll be repeating it at the end, is ICMEP, Post Office Box 12005, Fort Wayne, Indiana, 46862. The other way would be to go to our website, Indiana CMEP, and follow the link there. Okay, now, so Abed, it's very good to see you. First of all, before we get into the work of Al-Ruwad and all the rest, how are you and your wife and kids doing?
Good evening for everybody. Thank you for organizing this, Terry and Michael. We are doing well. Alhamdulillah, everybody is fine. And we hope that all of you are safe and healthy. And our hearts go to all the families who have been touched with this pandemic and lost or suffer from the the suffering of their beloved ones. So we pray for health and safety for everybody, and we hope that we will pass this stronger together.
Thank you so much, Abed. You're living under you might choose different language, but it strikes me under a double occupation curfew, one because of the coronavirus and one because of the Israeli occupation, the military occupation. I know you're in regular contact with your staff in Bethlehem on a daily basis, particularly the Ida camp. Tell us about the Ida camp and life there, and maybe the Haitia and the other camps as you know about them in the West Bank, because we know that the situation for refugees might even be a little bit more difficult than in the general population.
Well, yes, Ida camp is one of the three refugee camps in Bethlehem governorate, one of the 19 in the West Bank, and one of the 27 in Palestine, and one of the 59 in including other refugee camps in neighboring countries. So we have about 6,200 people living in Ida refugee camp with a population of around 630 families. With young population, two-thirds are under 24 years old. And it is in a particular situation since we are surrounded by this illegal war of expansion and annexation on the east and north, with some of the most frequent incursions by the Israeli occupation army. And of course, the population in refugee camps is touched by more than 50 to 60% of unemployment rate. So this is another burden on the population. And since the beginning of the pandemic, because it was the beginnings were in Bethlehem, in a hotel that hosted a Greek delegation. And then it started expanding a little bit also with the pandemic on the Israeli side, with workers coming back from the Israeli side to the Palestinian territories and areas without being really checked for the disease and sent. And even, I don't know if you have seen today videos of Israeli soldiers cutting their own fence to allow smuggling the workers who might be infected or not to the Palestinian areas without being controlled and so on. So expanding and the expansion of the infection in Palestinian areas, which has been strong in controlling, in fact, the pandemic. We reached about 263 cases of infected people in the West Bank and Gaza. There is 44 who have recovered from the disease, one death, and the others are still under, there is more than 35,000 people who are under quarantine, whether it's in their own houses or those who are infected in the official quarantine area. And the refugee camps are hit particularly in the sense that it is on one side a double closure, especially in Bethlehem area where it started, since we are in quarantine since now 35 days. And the Palestinian Authority has declared an additional month till the 6th of May to expand the closure and limitation of movement for the population. And with people are suffering from different shortages, then it was obvious that there is this hit of food, medicine, for especially for chronically ill people and so on. And those who are daily workers as well add another tragedy to their own life suffering. The Israeli incursions did not stop, unfortunately, in certain areas. Even in some areas in the south of Bethlehem, settlers and colonizers have been made conquests to the Palestinian villages and lands, poisoning the earth and cutting trees and so on. And so it's ongoing, unfortunately. And the biggest danger, actually, which is under discussion, is Israeli government discussing also the annexation of the West Bank.
Yeah.
And so they exploit this situation also for their political purposes on one side to discuss this annexation to follow up on the deal of the century designed by the government of Mr. Trump. And then the other side, they exploit Palestinian workers to work on them and retain them, or some of them for the building and so on, without giving them adequate protection. And then they throw them in illegal ways on the Palestinian side without, again, being tested and so on. So all of this adds to the burden of the Palestinian Authority, who tried to control by all means, and I guess it was one of the most effective control ways, on one side, to limit the expansion of the pandemic, because otherwise we would be struggling hard with the limited resources that we have on our hospitals, ventilators. There is only 4 ventilators in Bethlehem area, respiratory devices. On all the West Bank and Gaza, it's about 129 devices. So it will never, even if all these people who are actually sick need the devices, it would not be enough. On the other level...
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. On the other level, I guess the biggest challenge was also with the control on the medical equipment or swab test that arrives to the Palestinian areas by the Israelis. And so, especially in Gaza, for example, nothing was allowed in Gaza. And they have to try to create ways to manufacture their own safety response things, and even some design of a respiratory device as well. They made some prototypes in Gaza, in Jerusalem University, and in Hebron area with Royal Company and so on. So that is a bigger challenge as well, because Israelis are controlling what comes in and what goes out from Palestinian areas.
I wanted to, you said a mouthful, and you gave us a real good overview. I want to pick out some of the things that you said so you can highlight them a little bit more one at a time, if that's okay.
Yep.
You talked about, and I've read this and heard this from other friends in the West Bank, that really the Palestinian Authority had a very their strategy for controlling the pandemic has been one of the most successful in the world. I mean, it's been,
yes.
I don't mean to underplay the crisis, but in comparison to the rest of the world, the percentages of people who have been affected by the coronavirus have been rather small in the West Bank, because people have been sheltering in place, and the PA has had an effective strategy. Part of the problem has been, and this is the one of the points I wanted you to talk a little bit more about, if a Palestinian worker who has to go to Israel for his or her employment, if they get sick there, because the Israelis haven't had such an effective strategy, if they get sick in Israel, the Israelis bring them straight to one of the checkpoints and dump them on the other side as quickly as possible, and they have to fend for themselves. And so you mentioned that briefly about the soldiers at the fences or settlers at the fences. Say a little bit more about that and how that's been inflicting itself in the West Bank.
Yes, I guess there has been a lot of critics to the Israeli government for their late response and the way they are handling the pandemic. Now they have more than 9,900, and I guess the exact number until now is 9,968 infected cases, with about 80 deaths and tens of thousands of people under quarantine and so on. So the deal was with the Palestinian Authority that if they want to keep the workers, that they have to provide them with the protection and shelter for a period of 1 or 2 months at least, because they wanted to keep them for the during the Passover so that the construction continues and other work continues. Yeah. And so unfortunately, the Palestinian Authority after that agreement was surprised that the Israelis did not respect that deal. And Palestinian workers who seem to be infected or show some symptoms, I guess even they were not even tested. They were just thrown away on these places. And when the Palestinian Authority tried to put these limitations of when, where to deliver and these workers and to handle them, they started creating these alternative ways to allow them to pass it through the, how you call it, the defense they cut in, or even the water or sewage passage areas, like tunnels under the bridges and so on, to allow the workers to pass it through. So they did not respect that. They did not respect their engagement to protect these workers and to help them be safe. And they did not respect the engagement that they had with the Palestinian Authority to deliver these workers on specific areas so that the Palestinian medical teams can meet them and do at least the primary checking before sending them for home quarantine or take them to the official quarantine areas to be hospitalized and so on, unfortunately.
Yeah, thanks for fleshing that out a little bit more. You also mentioned, and of course, this has gone unnoticed by the international community, all the while the quarantining and the sheltering in place is happening both in Israel and especially in the West Bank, rather successfully in the West Bank. There's still military incursions into the West Bank. Homes are still being demolished. Night raids are still continuing to arrest kids and young men. Illegal settlers are uprooting olive trees, creating new illegal posts in the Jordan Valley. And as you said, there's even talk and maybe even action toward annexing parts or all of the West Bank. Can you say more about are there examples or can you say more about that to give us more details?
Well, the examples of the illegal settlers' actions are mostly in the south of Bethlehem area and in the neighborhoods of Ramallah, Nablus areas, where they attacked villages, they cut trees, they poisoned the fields, and so on. They did not start annexation except with the Jordan Valley that has been started, and they kept control over that as well. But there has been a reaction from the Palestinian Authority rejecting that and trying to put naked the Israeli policies about it and so on. So until today, it is within the discussion, the Israeli Knesset and government discussions about it, as far as I know. And no action was really made to on the ground, except with the Jordan Valley and so on. But the idea is that they exploit every chance where the attention of the world is somewhere to go elsewhere. That reminds me of the incursion and invasion of 2002 for 43 days, besieging the Church of the Nativity, invading all the West Bank and so on. They started building this illegal wall of expansion and annexation. And they put the foundation on of it in as barbed wires, 3 meters high, 3 meters deep in the ground, to then erect it with 6 meters to 12 meters high, depending on the location and so on. So they always use these strategies when there is such tragic situations to change the orientation. The media is looking somewhere and their actions is going elsewhere. They have not been very successful in dealing with the pandemic until now, despite all the measures they are trying late to do, actually. But even with their curfew, even with their thing, it is within the limited time frame. But the construction continues, the Israeli policies continues, the invasions continues, killing innocent people continues, imprisonment of young people. They invaded the Haitian refugee camp a few times during this pandemic. They arrested some young people and so on. They shot and killed some another young man and so on. So it's unfortunately still going on, and they are talking about protecting of people and limiting the expansion of the pandemic, while they are one of the main causes of it, especially in what concerns us as well.
One of the things that we've been really concerned about here in the U.S., a number of activist groups around the country have been focused on through Defense for Children International Palestine, have been focused on the prison population, especially the children and young people in prisons, and about how they become incubators then for the virus because they're in such close proximity. Is there any movement within the Israeli government to loosen that or not? Talk to us about the prison situation.
Unfortunately, we did not hear about it. In fact, one of the prisoners who was released was infected by the virus. And again, the Palestinian Authority was not informed about it. And so I imagine when the families meet their released ones and, you know, how much love and how many people are meeting. And so in Jenin, it was 10,000 people, more than 10,000 people to receive one of the liberated prisoners from the Israeli prisons. Wow. But fortunately, recently, some people who have ended their time and were released, they did make their precautions and told their families to stay away and did their own home quarantine so on to protect their beloved ones as well. So unfortunately, the Israelis have been, I don't know how the disease got to the prisoners, the Palestinian prisoners who are under the most secure conditions. Sure. And I don't know if it is in purpose or not that it has happened by one of the guards or whatever. But it did happen, and there was some cases of infected people within Israeli prisons. And there has been a lot of calls, even from the Palestinian president and the Palestinian government, to liberate those who are sick and who are chronically sick and who have their immunity system compromised and so on, to be released so that we can take care of them. Until today, there has been no response concerning that these requests.
I've been trying to make some connections with folks in Gaza to have an interview there. I'm still working on that. Tell us what you know about Gaza.
Well, Gaza, as you know, is completely besieged. So the only cases which rise to 11 cases, as far as I know, and among whom I guess there is only four that have remained infected and did not recover, is already a prison that is besieged from all areas. And despite the interdiction of Israelis to allow medical equipment and so on to reach Gaza, they have done well until now. Of course, let alone the burden of the daily life and the some even time shelling of Palestinian areas in Gaza by the Israeli military and so on. But there has been, I think, good measures on that level. However, the quarantine area is deplorable and inhuman on one way or the other, because there is no, I don't know if there is no other possibilities or there was lack of vision about it and so on. But there has been hard quarantine area for the families in a school with lack of decent sanitary situation for them. There has been kind of coordination between part of the government in Gaza and part of the government in the West Bank to coordinate the efforts of the Palestinian Minister of Health. However, everything should pass by the Israeli permissions and so on. So that makes a lot of challenge for the Palestinian Ministry of Health to coordinate working or coordination of materials and health products and so on to pass from one side to the other, unfortunately. But I think we have been extremely lucky with the context in Gaza that we have this limited number. And these people, in fact, who carried the disease were outside the country and came back from two students who started that, I guess, and got it to some of the Palestinian security officers on the passage in Gaza and so on. And those carried it to others. But yani, alhamdulillah, it is within, it's very limited. And now there is only four cases who are still infected, did not recover, and seven among the 11 were have recovered.
Well, that's I didn't know that. That's new news to me. Because the scare, of course, is because they're living in such close quarters in Gaza that it would just spread like wildfire, you know. And so this is good news. This is good news that you're sharing with me.
Yes, because I guess, as I said, the Palestinian Authority have really been very serious about the situation and took the measures immediately and followed the example of Korea, I think, of South Korea with that. So the expansion of the disease have been extremely limited. And it's only for those careless people who really did not make attention, and some of the workers who came back and did not respect the recommendations of the Minister of Health and so on. Otherwise, the people have been very restrained. And I mean, we are used to that. So that put us on equality now with everybody in the world. And I guess especially with the Israelis who now know what it means to put people under curfew, what it means to be under curfews, what it means to dehumanize people, and so on. And I remember one of the Palestinian journalists who have Israeli journalists contacting him and asked him, how could you live under such situation? How were we Israelis able to make you suffer in such way, in such an inhuman way?
And oh, so, wow.
So it is a clear lesson for everybody who do not understand what it means to restrain people and put them under curfews and not allow them to circulate and not allow them the basic human rights of free movement and so on.
Because we have a few folks who have joined us on this call, I'm going to ask two more. I have a number of questions yet, but I'm going to ask two more. And then I'm going to invite, I see Linda and Anita and Pam and Rami and George. So I'm giving you a heads up. If we'll have time for a couple of questions from you all, if you'd like to ask Abed a question in just a couple of minutes. So let me ask him a couple more, and then if you'd like to ask a question, you can jump in then. Okay. So Abed, you're in Jerusalem right now in your apartment there with your family. We know that your wife is a school principal in the Old City. How are things in Jerusalem, and how are things in the Old City?
Yeah, she is vice principal, in fact, deputy principal. Okay. That was the situation when I arrived to Jerusalem. The Palestinian Authority have declared the day after. Or the same day, in fact, that Bethlehem was under full closure. And the Israelis also announced that. So I was on one side retained in Jerusalem. And the kids and my wife continued to go to their schools until the 15th or 16th, when the Israelis started making measures for those who came from Bethlehem should be under a home quarantine and so on, which we did, of course, and so on. Lately, the Israeli police and Minister of Health issued some recommendations, and they try to force them in some areas. like people should not be circulating except within the limit of 100 meters around their homes to buy products, goods, or whatever. And they also later on said people should be moving with gloves and masks, and otherwise they will have a fine of 500 shekels and so on. The same situation they try to follow with the closures of mosques and churches and so on. They have a lot of trouble with the Israeli religious Jews who have been not very respectful for that, and they have to deal with them in sometimes in a very violent way to, to separate them and so on and confine them. But the, globally, I think there has been, I guess they waited for their feast to end and so on, and then the Easter, so they started a curfew that they said since Tuesday to Friday to tomorrow. And then I don't know how the situation would be. So it's a little bit loose in that sense, because some people, when they hear the Israeli police circulating around, they would hide or whatever. But not much. Part of the huge expansion, about 10,000 people now, a little bit less, are infected by the virus on the Israeli side. Part of it is not respecting the recommendations that had been given by the Ministry of Health. And sometimes also what disturbs that is the military actions. The military actions are not coordinated with the Ministry of Health recommendations. So that makes a huge problem on that side. We have been very respectful to the quarantine, and we have been in the house, and almost during this period of almost 32 days, 33 days now, I have got to buy vegetables and fruits and so on only four times and so on. So we try to remain respectful, to help each other and protect each other and the others. Even my parents-in-law live like 400, 500 meters. We just Skype or talk on the phone and don't visit. My mother-in-law is sick, so we don't want to expose her as well to any other burden on one sure. side or in one way or the other. And of course, I follow up with my team, so we can talk about that also.
Yeah, I want to ask you about Arawad in just a second. I mean, that's really what I want to ask you about, but I have one more question about just the situation, you know, with banks closed. I'm just wondering, I'm assuming that if people are going to the market or other kind of the necessary kinds of shopping that they have to do, are stores just giving credit? How are neighbors helping neighbors? I mean, the economy, just like here in the U.S., and around the world, the economy must be suffering greatly, and particularly in these little neighborhood shops where vegetables and meat are sold, these small shops, I'm assuming that people sometimes don't have the money to pay for what they need.
Within the West Bank, yes. I can assure that there is a lot of people who buy on credit from the shops within Aida camp and within the small quarters and neighborhoods, not from big supermarkets or whatever, or companies. There has been some beautiful initiatives from some people who put vegetables and fruits for open and put a label that take what you need, and if you cannot afford to pay it, don't pay it. And if you want to pay it, then later you can write, but if you cannot, then it's fine. And I also have seen an example of a bush meat shop, chicken and meat, and also they put on an area, take what you need, and if you cannot pay, then is donated for you, and so on. There has been other initiatives with people sending packages of food and so on, and this is where we were trying to help the most with our community and so on, to try to provide food. And bigger issue is with the medicine as well. But in terms of these kinds of things, yes. And there has been also some initiatives where people who have some money go to the market, to some shops, like in Aida Camp and some neighborhoods, and said, give me your book of debts. So if people tell me which families are the most, the poorest in one way. And then they pay without telling everybody that they have paid for them. And that just the shopkeeper erases the debt or what the, these guys have paid for, and diminish the debt that they had, and so on. So there has been beautiful, really solidarity actions from local community or from organizations that try to raise funds to help their own community, and so on. And I guess, يعني, alhamdulillah, nobody is dying from hunger in Palestine. And we have a lot of meals that don't need very expensive ingredients as well. So that has been a very beautiful spirit. But of course, the shortage is enormous. And of course, the banks are closed to individuals. So they, if you don't have a credit card or whatever, then it's very challenging to be able to buy anything or deal with anything and so on. And that's why the burden is enormous for emergency response teams in the camps and elsewhere.
Now, I want to, and then we're going to turn it over, and if any of the other folks who are listening in want to ask a question, but I want to ask you now about Arawad. You know, your commitment to the arts and to the fostering of a positive culture has been enormous. And so the arts, you're an arts-centric organization. That's been the primary, in fact, the only emphasis for since your founding. However, just knowing you and being around Arawad, it's also very much needs-based and community-based. And so whenever there's been a need in the community, Arawad has been one of those organizations that's stepped up to just meet the needs of the people, whatever they might be. And so I guess what I want to ask you to share with us a little bit is, tell us about the work of Arawad now and how you're stepping in this time of pandemic to meet the needs of the community.
Well, I guess when I started Arawad...
This is your time for a commercial.
You know, when I started Arawad in 1998 with a group of friends, the basic concept was, for me, I wanted to do theater for children and young people. And I started with this concept that I call beautiful resistance, recognizing that every resistance against injustice, oppression, occupation is a beautiful act of humanity. And choosing arts, culture, and education are great acts of resistance. The aim essentially was how to save lives, how to inspire hope, how to give our children and young people to express themselves in the most beautiful, creative, and also non-armed ways, and think living rather than dying for Palestine. But arts are not an ivory tower. Arts are not far from people, and they are there to serve humanity and help people keep their dignity and not to transform them into charity actions or beggars at the end of the day. So that's why we cannot be saying we are doing arts for arts and we forgot about the what is around us. So when the second Intifada started in 2000, I could not say, well, I am just doing my theater and forget about everything else. It was about building peace within individuals to be able to build it in their community, in their country, and beyond, and in the world. So how can we build peace within individuals if these individuals do not have a way to express themselves one way or the other? So that's why others expanded in dance, in photography, in video, in education, supportive education program for children who have difficulties in learning, working with kindergartens, with schools, with parents, focusing a lot also on mothers, because I believe it's women who change the world much more than the man, and who build the peace within the house through the mother and so on, to build it in the community. And expanding beyond that, to go all over the world, doing our shows, performing our shows, and show this other image of Palestine that is not usually shown in the media. Say that we are human beings, we reclaim and we defend our humanity. And we are not born with genes of hatred or violence. Nobody is born with that. But we are people who are under illegal occupation. And we have every legitimate right to resist the occupation by all means. And yet, most of the people have resistance through non-armed ways, through keeping their culture, their humanity, their dignity. And when people come, the most thing they feel, how much warmth and generosity and Palestinians have, and how hospitable they are despite the inhuman conditions that they are put through by this illegal Israeli occupation and by the marginalization even of the international community. Luckily, people like you who bring people and see and meet directly with people like us, see that whatever the media is transmitting, there is a shortage of truth about what is it transmitted about Palestine and Palestinian people and the facts on the ground created by this Israeli illegal occupation. So that's why, I guess, when there was the siege of the Nativity and the siege of Bethlehem in 2002 for 43 days, we were working 24 hours a day. There is no clinic in Aida refugee camp. Arwad also transformed into an emergency medical clinic, working 24 hours a day, a school for supportive education program, because the schools also were closed during curfews. And Aida camp have suffered a lot of curfews and incursions by the Israeli occupation army. So we have to deal with a lot of emergency responses on our own, because even Palestinian Authority could not intervene at a certain time. We are not part of the municipalities, though in this crisis specifically, the mayor of Bethlehem has been very cooperative and have been wonderful in dealing with the situation and help us to with sanitation materials and so on. And the employees worker also do spraying of disinfectants and so on around. So we have to deal with things on our own. UNRWA has not been intervening when there is danger for their staff. And this is what we see today with the relief work is completely absent through UNRWA and so on. Though the director of the camp, UNRWA director of the camp and so on, with his staff have been amazing also. And the sanitation team has been amazing in doing the work on that level. But relief and social work and so on has been extremely paralyzed by UNRWA, and no help has arrived to the camps through UNRWA and so on. So there is a lot of things that we have to deal with on our own. And as a community-based center, as a center within the heart of the Aida refugee camp, we also, even with the help we try to provide and organizing teams with other associations in the camp, with the popular committee in the camp, an emergency response team that has been used kind of to emergency responses during the invasions and incursions and curfews. So it was easy, let's say, for us to coordinate things on one way or the other, trying to raise funds, trying to link with Palestinian pharmaceutical companies, trying to deal with people who could help locally or internationally, to be able to support our own families to keep their dignity one way or the other. So the biggest challenge that we are facing today is on medical level, because there are medicines for chronically ill people. And some are available within the Palestinian Authority dispensaries, and some are available within the UNRWA clinics. But there are many others which are not available, especially for children and young people. and especially, for example, diabetes, depends for insulin. That is not available, and that are very expensive and locally. And even for testing the diabetes, these strips almost also are in great shortage and so on. So there is some needs. There are some cases of transplantation of spine marrow, bone marrow, and so on as well, and cancer cases and so on. So there are some who need, like even the Palestinian Authority cannot provide for their needs and so on. So this is the case that creates a problem a little bit. And of course, babies and pregnant women with the vaccinations, with the milk needs and so on, and additional products that are needed for them and so on. Fortunately, during this month, we were able, with the help and donations we received, to be able to cover part of it. But we have another month to go as well. And so and Ramadan is coming also, the fasting month on the 23rd of April and so on. A lot of challenges are coming as well and so on. But, you know, the Palestinian way is the food for one is good for two, and the for two is good for four and so on. So if money comes, we expand. If money don't, we may shrink a little bit. But the work continues. And we have an amazing team who are trying to respond, not only within the refugee camp, but also within the neighborhoods and neighboring areas. And a few days ago, we have a meeting with the mayor of Bethlehem, who came, and we did visit also the Franciscan Sisters convent nearby. And the message was clear: you are part of AIDA camp, so whatever thing we can help with, we will help with. And whatever we can't, we will contact the mayor of Bethlehem to help as well. So it's a spirit of community that is there to help each one within the camp and around the camp, and help our people keep their dignity and pass this challenge together and so on. So I guess we won the battle. We did not win the war against the corona, but we are winning the battle until today. And inshallah, we will pass it all over the world together, because the government responses in different countries have been various. But the amazing thing is that the richest, biggest countries in the world have really been the worst to respond well to this pandemic. And hopefully they will learn the lesson and put the human value in a precious level than their own businesses and the economy.
You have been listening to a Skype conversation between Abud Abusroor, director of the Al-Rawad Cultural Center in the AIDA refugee camp, and Michael Spath, director of the Indiana Center for Middle East Peace. Our time is up. Thank you for listening to This Week in Palestine, a weekly feature of Truth and Justice Radio. You can find our current and past programs on our archive. Here is how to reach it. On your browser, type in truthandjusticeradio.org, all one word, truthandjusticeradio.org, and click on This Week in Palestine Archives. Again, grab your computer and in your browser, type in truthandjusticeradio.org, all one word, and click on This Week in Palestine Archives. We thank you for your time, and we hope you will join us again next week for another edition of This Week in Palestine. This is your host, John Roberts. So long, until next time.